This is Angela Ewing with Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW. With Connie Hunter, coordinator and producer of Community Conversations, in collaboration with Ewing's Doings, my podcast series of stories and interviews with local talent. Today I'm here at Gold Beach Books in Gold Beach, Oregon with Gary Lark. Gary is a poet who is published and well known for his series of very interesting poetry. Gary, thank you for coming to meet me today. From the brief bio, I read you are a retired librarian, storyteller, carpenter, janitor, salesman, and hospital aide. There's a lot of variation, obviously, in your life. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your childhood, and where you grew up.
All right. I grew up in the Umpqua Valley, not far from here. I claim the Umpqua as my home territory, rather than, say, Roseburg, because I spent most of my time on the river or in the hills or somewhere. And so that's I claim the river as my third parent. And my parents always thought if I was out on the river, I was okay. You know, they didn't pay any attention to me if I was out there. So.
You're an outdoor person.
I was, yes. Yes.
Yes.
I'd like to be now, but my knees sometimes dictate how far I go. So.
When you say on the river, be more succinct about what do you mean by that?
When my early growing up time, we were on the main Umpqua, and we're just like a couple of hundred yards away, and so I spent every summer swimming in the river, and when we weren't swimming, we were out on the boat fishing or hunting ducks or chasing squirrels. There are many places along the river you can get to by boat.
Right, right.
And that was at a time when I was able to not worry about safety or anything.
Right.
And we could leave our boat down there in the river, tied up to a very small makeshift dock with the motor on it and the fishing poles, and you could leave them all summer or all fall without ever thinking about it.
Of course, those were the days.
Yeah.
Your poetry is very down to earth, and it reveals so much of you. It sounds as though you've experienced a lot of life in these very varied occupations. And from the poems I've read, your experience through life comes out in your poems, and it seems to reach into other people's worlds as well. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes.
And where do you start to write such emotional laden stories? Are you sitting alone thinking about your own past, or what sort of an environment do you need to write as you do?
Generally, yes, alone. I need to have quite a bit of space, both emotional and somewhat physical, just to be away from distractions.
Mm-hmm.
And That way, I suppose I can contact the stories, the history, the experience, and also current world and observe what's mm-hmm. going on.
Your poetry reads like a story most times, doesn't it?
I do like to tell a story. I think that's where we are. As human beings, I think we need and hunger for stories. And so telling them is also satisfying to me, as well as listening to others.
This, the one that I liked very much, that actually was very moving to me, was Hard Diplomacy.
Ah, yes.
Would you read that for us today?
I would. I want to first of all say that the word Bataan is in here, and that's about the Bataan Death March mm-hmm. in World War II.
Yes, I figured that out. Good.
Hard Diplomacy. He was my father's age, still tall and sinuous, with glinting eyes and haunted dreams. Bataan lived in his blood like a virus. The retreat, half-rations, the capitulation, miles of thirst, dysentery, the everyday random death. He had carried a friend the last 20 miles only to see him beheaded. He slept with a Ruger 44 under his pillow. It had a special sling in his truck. His wife had talked him through thousands of nightmares. In 1976, with cancer in his gut, the best surgeon in our small town, one David Tanaka, was to operate. He surrendered to anesthetic with a 44 resting in his wife's purse. Through a colostomy and another surgery, there was a hard diplomacy. The son of a Japanese family from Fresno treated him with respect, with deference for the driving story that lived in this man. The patient lived another 12 years, now and then stopping for coffee with the enemy.
Very good. I loved that. Loved it.
I had that experience while I was working at the North Bend Library, the North Bend Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know the family. And he was, you could tell what he carried inside him. And so I was glad to be able to write this 20 years after the fact.
Right, right.
It finally gelled.
He must have been really pleased with that.
He never saw it.
Because he was too old by then, and he died by the time you...
Oh, yes. Yeah, he lasted 12 years, and I wrote this 20 years afterward.
I see you, yes, after, of course. I was starting to think you're too young to be part of that, so you must have really got into his soul. Mm. I mean, his...
Well, I grew up in... I was born in 1945.
Right.
And I grew up with some awareness of the men who had been in World War II.
Right.
My father wasn't. He was 4F for several reasons. And he also worked in the lumber industry, which was somewhat exempt from going. But he worked with a lot of men who had been in World War II in Korea. And then I was in the National Guard during the Vietnam War. And it was some of that experience that made me understand what that world is, how small a person can be in a machine like that. But we all have that experience. We carry that experience for everybody else. It's always that person carrying the experience for everybody. So it's important, I think, to gather that and speak of it and witness it.
Yes, very moving. I thought that was extremely... I would think it would be hard to write something like that. As a writer, I know if I'm writing something that is dear to me, I often cannot put it all down at that moment. I have to think about it. I'm sure you do as a poet. It doesn't all come straight away, does it? It.
No, we like to think it can.
Right, right.
And sometimes it does pretty close, you know. You still have to mess with it, and, you know. But sometimes it's ready to come out. The thing's ready to hatch, and so...
Right.
It's a matter of shaping it and letting it happen.
So when you have written each part of that, because it's really freestyle, isn't it, as opposed to the old cadence and the rhythm, and people these days write more in story form.
Right? Yeah, there are still lyric poets, and some of them start there. I start usually from story, not always. So I've written some recently that I think makes some sort of sense, but it's not literal.
Right. because you always have a little twist somewhere in that, either your the last line of your...
Well, you hope for a surprise. You hope for a surprise
exactly.
that surprises me.
Right.
As well as the listener or the reader, so...
Lovely. And it seems to me that fishing is a very descriptive poem also, and of course it's a familiar place to Oregonians. We know that place, so that would be lovely if you would read it also.
Yes, this is one that's a reflective poem. It has something to do with who I am as a person while I'm standing there in the river. Fishing. Standing thigh deep in the Yahats River, the fly drifting under a shadow, I wear my father's shirt. His body and mine, I and his shirt, our hands move in similar patterns. I have the turn of his mouth in my reflection. Our language is mostly silence, but somehow from his father to me comes this patchwork of sensations. The river swirls around my knees, tugging me downstream under the trees. A long, quiet pool. A cutthroat takes the fly, and three arms set the hook.
The arms set the hook.
My grandfather was a fly fisherman, and my father was a fly fisherman, so naturally, when we got introduced to the world of fishing, it was with a fly rod. And that was not... something extraordinary. You know, now you can get $10,000 rods and all the fancy gear and sequins on your waders, but
yeah.
I don't... we just caught fish. You know, we just... I never wore waders, and if it was too cold, you just got numb.
Yes, I expect you did up there.
But we didn't fish in the dead of winter with a fly rod, but like some do now. But we had a lot of fun. It's the place that I remember really well, where I grew up. And was able to experience something that to me was paradise. And so I'll read this one
yes,
for you.
Please.
It's called Copeland Creek. It's a little creek up the North Umpqua that you probably won't even notice when you're driving by now because the highway just takes up where this place was. But Copeland Creek. Long before they were paved, we drove the stutter of washboard roads pounded endlessly by log trucks 30 miles up Adam's bony ribs to a paradise called Copeland Creek. We camped where the creek spills into the North Umpqua. I was 8 years old and the river sang. After sleeping in the river's voice, my father, his friend, and I put fly rods together. Mine a 9-foot bamboo with mended tip and casting reel full of fly line. We waded pool to pool, side to side, the flash of silver filling our creels. There were pools too deep, so the closest man would grab my free hand and pull me half swimming to the next gravel bar. Back at camp, morning light still filtering through fir needles, mother tended Dutch oven biscuits while trout curled in the frying pan. There's a part of me still there, surrounded by enormous trees, the river singing me alive.
Lovely.
When the trout are very fresh, they don't lay flat in the frying pans.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I don't know. They sort of constrict. And
yes.
And those were 6, 7, 8-inch fish, you know. I still think of that as the epitome of fishing is catching a batch of those little mountain trout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful memories you have.
Yes.
And of course you can go back and do it now. You can go fishing still.
Yes.
You can do those things.
Yes.
And you do.
Yeah.
Good.
There are still a few places you can go that are not trampled. And I always figure if I can get to a place where I see a bear paw claw in the sand,
yes,
or a cougar sign, and or a marten, or you know, somebody who is not human up there, then I know I've gotten to a spot, you know, where I might be able to, you know, catch a fish or just
right,
be in the right place.
Right. There was a joke that someone used to tell me, and he'd say, he watched this man fishing all day long, and he said, I just wouldn't have the patience for that. I suppose you have to have a lot of patience, but it gives you a chance to think.
I grew less patient with boat fishing, where I would troll and hopefully catch something. I like to be on and in the river.
Well, you seem to be a man of all seasons.
Well, I'm getting toward the other season.
Gary, it's such a pleasure to read your work and have this opportunity to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for asking.
For KCIW, this is Angela Ewing with Ewing's Doings. To listen to more interesting interviews with poets and writers, go to kciw.org, Curry Coast Community Radio in Brookings, Oregon. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio and help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you for listening.